Hello, and welcome to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is our series on learning disabilities, the hidden disability. And I'm working with this with a wonderful person. Her name is Linda Price, Dr. Linda Price. She's a former professor at Temple University in Philadelphia. Linda and I have worked on several projects. My background is in special education. And we chose this topic because there is lots of information on learning disabilities in the K through 12, kindergarten through 12th grade students, but very little about adolescents, students that are transitioning into jobs, and adults who have learning disabilities. You don't just get rid of a learning disability. So this is our next to last show, and we thought in this episode we would talk about what can you do about learning disabilities. I think too many times we talk too much about what is a learning disability, but we don't talk about the solutions. You don't get rid of a disability, but there are steps you can take to overcome a disability. For instance, a person who can't walk uses a wheelchair. A person who can't hear very well uses a hearing aid. Those are all accommodations that we use with a disability. But this time, Linda, let's talk a little bit about, we're going to talk about different groups and what you can do about learning disabilities. But the first group there is the people that I would consider the most supportive, and those would be talking about providing services for a child or a family member with a learning disability. What are some things that the family can do to, decrease the effects of a learning disability?
Well, the first thing I'd like to preface that area with, Steve, is that the research does show now that learning disabilities clearly runs in families, especially dyslexia. And Sally Smith used to talk about, she has a wonderful school in Washington, D.C. called the Lab School. And one of the reasons that she became interested in adults with learning disabilities is because parents and grandparents would come in wanting to get tested because they wanted to be able to read to their children or their grandchildren. And I think that's one of the hidden facts that we don't talk about very often, is that over and over and over again, adults have told me that they're concerned that their child may have a learning disability, maybe their grandparents had a learning disability, maybe their mother or father had a learning disability. So that's a key piece. The first one that you and I have talked a lot about is the concept of getting diagnosed. And Steve, you may want to talk a little bit about how you do that in Washington, because right. It varies so widely from state to state.
Yes, I think that, that's the... I didn't really, I was aware that it did fall in families, but it's almost very similar to mental health issues. If you go back and look in a family's history, you'll find out that if one of the grandparents has had a mental health issue, depression, any of those kinds of things, that there's a 20-30% chance that offspring, kids may have that. Then you go back and you mm-hmm. figure out if both grandparents have had it, maybe one other person along that family chain. And I think learning disabilities are very much like this. But again, it's with learning disabilities and the comparison to mental health issues, you know, with a lot of the mental depression and a lot of the mental health issues, you know, you can take something that maybe is affects serotonin in your brain and kind of eliminate it or reduce the effects of it. With learning disabilities, you can't do that. You can't you can't take a pill and no longer have a learning disability. So I think one of the things that's so important is to get a diagnosis, get it as early as you can, and make sure it's a good diagnosis. I found when I was teaching school, there were so many kids that parents had gone to a pediatrician, and the student might have been maybe a year disabled, you know, as opposed to his or her peers in language. And a pediatrician says, well, your kid has a learning disability. So the parents would come back to the school and tell us this, and we would still have to go through a battery of tests. And that's really the way you, you might want to talk about this a little, Linda, but if you, you really have to go through a series of tests. It's not just like taking a Cosmo quiz of 100 points. Do I have a learning disability or not? So,
exactly.
Yeah. So what do you think about that?
Well, one of the things that drives me absolutely crazy about the way we deal with learning disabilities in the United States is everything is decentralized. And if you go to other countries in the world, for example, if you would go to Germany, if you'd go to the United Kingdom, if you would go to Australia, you people that that are suspected to have, people or children who are suspected to have learning disabilities or dyslexia can automatically go to their you know what we would call their federal educational system. That would be part of the education that they get. They could go in and be tested free by professionals. Here in the United States, if you want to get a diagnosis for a child, and by the way, this is just my personal opinion, but I would never diagnose a kid below 5 years of age.
Right.
Because kids that are younger, right, you know where I'm going with that.
I do,
they're still changing, they're still growing, yada, yada, yada. So I would not, you can see red flags, but I would not diagnose below age five. But anytime from age five on up, if you're in the public school system, which would be basically ages five through 20, 5 to 21, your public school should do it free of charge. Now, this is huge, Steve, because when I used to do the LD diagnosis, and I think this is still true, they run anywhere from $1,500 to almost $3,000 a pop.
Right.
And insurance rarely pays for them. So many families do not have those resources that they could just pull that money out. But the to do a really good diagnosis, it's a battery of tests. It's not only just a reading test, but you will do an IQ test. You will do a skills test. You will, you know, you will answer a lot of questions, maybe do a personal inventory. You will do a cognitive test, a math test, spatial motor test. I mean, there's a whole variety.
Memory,
of tests that,
Right,
exactly. And what you're looking for is patterns. You're not looking to say, okay, I'm going to label you because you have an, you know, a 100 full-scale IQ, but you're looking to see where the patterns are. Because remember, this is a cognitive delay. This happens within the brain itself. You know, just like if you broke your leg, the doctor would do an x-ray of your leg to see where the bone was broken. If someone suspects you of LD or dyslexia, they're going to do a series of tests to find out, for example, where your cognitive skills are.
And that's
if
the,
that makes sense.
Yeah. And that's, and that's, I think, really important because, you know, you can go through a test that costs $3,500 and is pretty comprehensive. But you still can't create a direct nexus and say, even after that, you can reduce the odds on this, and that this child may have a learning disability. But again, like the X-ray, where it shows the bone is broken, you're not going to find that kind of direct access. And also,
right,
you're dealing with a soft tissue. We talk about soft skills, but a soft tissue injury where there is no, is no exact thing that you can point to that says you have a learning disability. So I think with a, like we talked about with the child or the family members, is make sure that they've had a good diagnosis. I've had parents come to me in school and say, you know, the pediatrician said he was positive the kid had a learning disability, and the kid was 3 years old and barely had, right, got any kind of language skills. So I think, right, that you would first get them diagnosed effectively, and then figure out what kind of accommodations, depending upon what kind of learning disability they have, whether it was dysgraphia, dyslexia, dyscalculia, whichever one of those. We also, I want to like you to talk about this one a little bit. We want the family, for the child member that has a learning disability, is that many times with the cognitive aspects of a learning disability, we also have the social aspects, the being able to communicate effectively with others. So one of the things we want families to do is to help the member with a disability to socialize and find hobbies and friends. Talk about the importance of that, Linda.
Well, and before I do that, I'm going to give a couple caveats on the diagnosis, because this is probably the most complicated, controversial area in the whole field of LD. First of all, you need somebody who's qualified to do the diagnosis. And I'm not going to get into this here, because, I mean, we could sit down over beer and pizza and spend the night talking about this. But one of the concerns, especially for individuals with ADHD or ADD, is that the parent takes the kid to the pediatrician. The parent says, I think the kid is hyperactive. The pediatrician looks at him and goes, yep, they look hyperactive to me. Here's a prescription. And all of a sudden, the kid has that label. That's exactly what you do not want to do with learning disabilities. And you need to go to someone who has extensive training in the area, either someone that is a psychologist, a psychiatrist, some kind of an educational specialist, somebody from your local university. You need to be very careful who gives that diagnosis. Second thing you need to be very careful about, and this will give us all gray hairs if we don't have them already, is that everybody's definition of LD is different. Remember, we talked about that in the first episode. So if somebody is diagnosed with learning disabilities in the state of Washington, they could go to Mississippi, and that may or may not be a diagnosis that will be certified, you could get accommodations for. So you need to be very careful to make sure who's doing the diagnosis,
right,
if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And I think also through that diagnosis, if it includes a social component.
Yes.
I have a friend who,
yes,
has a family member who has been diagnosed as having a learning disability. And one of the things about this, yeah, child is the child is very good at taking things apart, putting things back together, mechanical, yeah, skills. Is also very interested in those kinds of things. So that's the kind of,
absolutely,
thing you want to stress, like the old song, accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. And I think that's exactly what you want to do.
Absolutely.
And what that does is that gets more information, really, for yourself when you're working with the student. Let's go to another category and talk about friends, spouses, or a significant other with a learning disability. What are some of the things you should do there?
Boy.
Yes.
That's I was saying oi, oi, oi and teasing you because that's a real can of worms.
Right.
First of all, it's really important to share with your listeners, you can be diagnosed with a learning disability at any time in your life. Steven Spielberg was just diagnosed with a learning disability 5 years ago.
Really? Wow.
So, yeah. And I mean, the oldest person I've ever done a diagnosis on was 55 years old.
Wow.
So you can do this at any point. And a lot of times when I've diagnosed older people, the first thing that you will find out is that their significant other or their spouse or whoever they're living with is their primary support and their primary their primary person that gets them through the day. And we know that when you're in a good marriage or a bad marriage or a good relationship or a bad relationship, that those are the people that kind of check to make sure, you know, okay, you're going to the grocery store. Do you remember what you're going to get? Oh, okay, you know, you need to renew your driver's license. Did you forget that? Oh, you know, those kinds of daily things. And so for spouses or people that live with someone with a learning disability, they become the key person in that person's life. But what we don't know a lot about and what we don't have any research on is what kind of a toll that takes on the person that lives with someone with LD every day.
You right.
know, we don't know that. But what we do know is that that person can make a difference between the success or failure of that person. So, for example, it's really important. I would say probably 80% of all of the adults with LD that I have ever talked to always say that at some point they feel like nobody gets them.
Right.
Nobody understands them. And so because it's an invisible disability, that person that you're married to or you're living with or that is your best friend or whatever, having them to talk to or to be able to say, hey, you know what? I can tell you're having a bad day. What's going on? You know, gently encouraging them, but not pushing. You know, don't sit down with them and go, oh, okay, you've got a learning disability. Tell me what that is. How are we going to deal with this? Tell me what I have to do. That doesn't work. It's like you're kind of like their invisible safety net, if that makes sense.
Yes, and I would think,
you know, you're always there.
And I would think you would also want to be fairly flexible. And, you know, the one thing that I think is important is this difference in, you know, prepositions is that you want to do something with them in maybe determining an accommodation or listening to them rather than doing something for them. You know, let them, they're going to have to get out there at some point by themselves and support support their issues and accommodate their issues on their own. The family is not always going to be there. So I think let them solve some of those things. Ask them, what's difficult about reading this this phrase? And later on, if you can't remember it, what are some ways that we could understand this more? My wife, I'm not saying my wife has a learning disability because I don't think she does.
No.
But one of the things is that when she reads a book, and she reads a lot, like a novel, she'll take notes and write down, characters in the book and to remember them and then go back. And it's just simple. A very simple way of doing it and just remembering the book and doing those kinds of things. Let's talk about coworkers and you know, of friends, mm-hmm. fellow students, or teachers. You know, I think one of the things is, if we talk about accommodations for learning disabilities, you ask a student or a person with a learning disability, well, what do you need to be successful? Well, that's too wide open a question. It's too nebulous. And what they're going to say is nothing. When they may, you know, so a lot of times the question, you know, the answer is knowing what to ask for and knowing how to analyze that. So I would say with coworkers is again, ask them what the problem is and how would you solve it? What would help you? Writing something down, having a diary, having a daily list of activities that you do during your day, having a daily list of tasks that you do during your day. What are some other things that we could think about when working with coworkers and bosses?
Well, what's interesting, Steve, is that I think because LD and dyslexia are hidden disabilities, there's a tremendous sense of shame and embarrassment around having these disabilities. And it literally, one adult told me, he said, it's literally like being gay and coming out of the closet. It's like saying to someone, like a coworker, you know, you go to a meeting and you know how we all go to these staff meetings, half the time people fall asleep or they're doodling or whatever. Somebody with a learning disability or somebody with, let's say, attention deficit disorder, they're not going to get anything out of that meeting at all if it's all auditory. And so that's the person that comes out of the meeting and they don't know any more than when they went in. And if you have someone that you're comfortable with, that you trust as a coworker, and, you know, you're saying, oh, okay, you know, we've got another staff meeting, and would you do me a favor? Would you just write down three or four of the key points? Now, if you're comfortable with this as a person with a learning disability, you could take that person out for a drink or a cup of coffee and go, you know what? I know that I asked you to take notes for me last week in the staff meeting, and that's because they have a learning disability. And I just don't always remember what I hear. And it has nothing to do with you or anybody else. I just don't remember it. So if you do that for me, I would be more than glad to close early for you on Friday night because I know that you want to go home to see your grandkids. So you do you find a relationship where you trust someone in your business. Some people choose to do that with their employers. We've already talked about already, you know, how many people with LD are very suspicious about self-disclosing because they're afraid they're going to get fired. So you have to be careful about that. But coworkers can be, if they're supportive, if they, again, just provide that little extra help if somebody asks for it, that's gigantic.
And
does that make sense?
It does. And as my wife always tells me, sometimes you just need to listen. You don't need to solve the problem for me. And I think that's, again, here talking about persons with learning disabilities is you may not need to solve the problem. You may need to lead them to a resource that's going to help them. I have no problem with that, mm-hmm. but in any solution that you do, the person needs to have a part of the ownership of that. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that, and I think this is critical, is when you're in a job situation, you really, if it's a boss or if it's a coworker, and you know about another employee who may have disclosed they have a learning disability or need some accommodation as a result of that, you need to be confidential. Should not be office-wide news that, this person has a disability. And, you know, really that really got back to, again, when when HIV, you know, first kind of came out and we heard about it, and, you know, somebody would, a bus driver or anybody or teacher would, you know, would mention that some kid had HIV as a result of a blood transfusion or something else. And the next thing you know, everybody ostracizes the kid. That happened many, many times. So I think that that the confidential aspect of it is really important. And I also think just kind of as we kind of get down to our last few minutes here, just, you know, if you have a learning disability, Linda, what are some of the things that you can do? Not have done for you, but what you can do?
Well, I'll give you a quick list because these are all important. First of all, don't isolate. That's one of the real concerns. People with learning disabilities, because they feel misunderstood, because they feel there's so much ignorance in the world about learning disabilities, they tend to pull into themselves and isolate and never, ever, ever talk about their LD. So don't isolate. Also, don't give up. Please, 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 if you're listening today and you have a learning disability or dyslexia, don't give up. It seems many, many adults have told me that they it's what they call hit a wall, that they feel like there's a lot of things they could do and all of a sudden something will happen with their LD and maybe they can't remember, they can't write, they can't organize, and it's like they want to give up. They literally hit a brick wall. Don't do that. One of the key components to success for people with all kinds of disabilities are to be resilient. And hopefully we'll talk about that when we talk about the wellness broadcast.
Right. And I think
figure out what you do best.
Sure. And that's kind of what I was going to say is, you know, and we've talked before in our past about being optimistic. I think it's important to know that if you look at a person who is employed from the time that they're out of high school or college to the time that they retire, statistics show us that we don't just have one job for, you know, 25 or 30 years. We may have 5 to 10 to even more jobs in that time period. And each one of those jobs requires different skills. So, like you say, if we have a learning disability, we need to be flexible. We need to be resilient. It's not going to be the same in every single job. And we need to realize that and realize that things are going to be unique and different. Well, right now, I think we've got just a couple minutes. And I want to talk a little bit about the program, in that we have really dealt with disabilities from a diagnosis basis. We have talked about how family members or different people can assist, and we've really tried to address those kinds of needs. If you have any questions on learning disabilities, please address them to either me, Dr. Steve Nurse, at the VOV station, or you can also contact Dr. Linda Price at the website littleoldladyprofessor.com with no spaces in any of those words. And you'll get a hold of Linda and or me, and we'd be glad to follow up and help you with whatever we can there. So that is about it for this episode. We're going to sign off. Thank you for listening. And we have one more episode. We're going to talk about social wellness and then recap the entire program. So goodbye for today, listeners. Have a great
To stream this or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofashon.org and look under the Shows tab.